Blog Talk Radio.
Well, a pleasant good day to you, good evening, and a great day to you to another episode. We're welcoming you to another episode of Can We Be Real? And we're going to be real tonight about our political situation in the country. We've got our brother Wesley Snail Jr. on the line, and we're going to talk about some things that are happening in our world today. What does it mean to speak truth to powers? What does it mean if we just live passively and go along just to get along? And how can we speak the truth in love? And what does the re-election of President Barack Obama mean besides a celebration in some communities? Some people are looking at the opposite side. They had over 50 million people to vote for Mitt Romney. But unfortunately, Mitt Romney didn't win for them, and Barack won for us. So we're celebrating that, but what does it mean to speak truth to powers, and how can we deal with it? These are some of the things we're going to talk about tonight, and even the clergy, some of them have said that they wouldn't even vote in this year's election. Welcome to the show, Brother Wesley Snail Jr.
How you doing, Brother Carl?
I'm doing well, man, doing well. Got a little hoarse in my voice, but I'm cool. I'm still here. Always counted a joy to talk with you.
Absolutely, man. Same to you.
Yes, sir. Yes, sir. Yes, sir. Man, I've been seeing the pictures of your baby girl growing up.
Man, listen, they're growing fast, man. So, you know, I kind of been in my head a little bit just trying to enjoy the little
ones.
Yes, sir. So, you know, it's time to
take a lot of pictures because they change quickly, I tell you. They change quickly. And
absolutely,
that's what this world is about. That's what our conversation is about tonight. It's leaving an inheritance for our children. And I think that's common between Republicans, Democrats, clergy, lay people, atheists, believers, non-believers, different religions. We all want to make the world a better place. But how we go about it, I think, is as individual as our own mindset. And with this thing going on, I know we've had some pretty deep conversations in the past and dealing with some of the stuff. But even as we move into this new election cycle, and you see other elections coming up, but the president is in there now for another 4 years. What does it mean to, you know, America as a whole? What does it mean that, you know, America spoke and reelected Barack Obama?
Well, listen, I think the first thing is, you know, we certainly got to congratulate the president in winning a tough fall campaign. As you know, there were billions and billions of dollars spent in this campaign, and half of that was spent basically trying to portray Barack Obama as being the issue, the reason that caused the kind of situation that we're in now. So, you know, with a vote of confidence on Tuesday night, President Obama got reelected, contrary to what some of the news pundits were saying, that this was a toss-up. In fact, it was not. I had been saying leading up to the election that Obama was going to win and that he was going to win handily. And what that really shows is that this, listen, the American people is not silly. They knew that we inherited a mess by the Bush administration. There was a lot going on those past 8 years, and that the president needed more time to essentially clean up the mess. You know, we did not want to go back and, you know, turn the clock on the same policies that kind of got us into the mess in the first place. Now, listen, we know that there's a lot of work to be done. You know, we need, you know, more affordable health care. We need better education. More people need jobs. You know, we need immigration reform, the full realization of equal rights for everyone. You know, now the real hard work begins. But, you know, the American people voted for Barack Obama, so that shows that, listen, we're up for the task, and they support his agenda.
Amen. And it was amazing, too, even the numbers afterwards. They said the ground game was huge, and that's what overcame the large advertising dollars that were on the other side. 55% of women, 71% of Latinos, 93% of black folks, and 60% of those 18 to 35. They're just not going for the okey-doke. I don't know how much of it you watched, but with Mitt Romney, I didn't even watch that much, but I saw at least five or six different, you know, flavors of Mitt Romney, you know. And so I think what is the tendency towards just telling people what they want to hear. Why is that so acceptable in our land?
Well, first, listen, let's look at the numbers real quick, real closely. When you look at the exit polls, 72% of the American people, white folk, who have voted for Mitt Romney, and he still lost.
Yeah.
And that tells us Barack Obama lost 72% of the white vote. That tells us that the demographics of America has changed completely. Basically, he was reelected by non-whites. That's a major shift. So with regards to the Republicans and their platform, they have to change it. They have to embrace people of color. They have to have a better immigration policy. They have to embrace gays and lesbians, things of that nature, in order to be attractive and to win in the future. Now, with regards to Mitt Romney, he showed many different faces. If you go back into the primaries, he was a very conservative. One of his quotes said that he was a severe conservative when he was a governor of Massachusetts. Now, we know better than that because Massachusetts is a very liberal state, and if he had been ultra-conservative, as he tried to portray himself, he would have never got reelected. And if you look at the same Mitt Romney that showed up during the three presidential debates, it was something totally different. You look at the foreign policy debate, he basically seconded everything that President Obama was saying. So that was his attempt to try to move back to the center. He knew he was down in the campaign, and so he really tried to portray himself as being a moderate, when in fact, who knows what he really is? Who knows what his real position is? And that's why, you could not vote for someone because you don't know what his core values is. Whether you agree with the president or not, you know what he stands for. He's been in office 4 years. You know what his morals are. You know what his convictions are. And you just could not vote for someone who would flip-flop back and forth. And lastly, if you went back to the campaign that Mitt Romney ran against Senator Ted Kennedy back in 2000, he basically said that no one would defend equal rights or gay rights more than he would. He said that he was certainly pro-choice and he supported Roe versus Wade. And then fast forward that 8 years later, he had like he never said that before. So the American people is not stupid. They knew these things.
It's amazing, though, that, some people actually think that you could pull the wool over their eyes and people would go for it in the 21st century. But, everybody's got a camera. Everybody's got a cell phone. Everybody's hooked up to the Internet. And it's amazing, too, that even his concession speech was a different Mitt Romney. And one of the commentators said if that Mitt Romney in the concession speech had showed up consistently throughout the campaign, it would have been a different result. So I think
I agree with that.
Yeah.
Well, you take that and take the damaging comment that I believe is the most damaging comment throughout the campaign, the 47%. In fact, when he made that comment behind closed doors, he actually disenfranchised part of his electorate because we know that the majority of folks who are on public assistance happen to be voting Republican. They happen to be white males. And so he essentially embarrassed his own electorate. And so when that got out there, it's like, really, who is this guy? I venture to say he's the same person that Dr. Cornel West stated in some of his writings. He's a plutocrat. He's an oligarch, one who has a lot of money, one who is a part of the elite class. And he says, basically, I'm entitled to be in this position, so vote for me. That's pretty much what he ran on.
Yeah, you want to bet? Let's say 10,000.
Absolutely, that's it.
and even I understand, too, his presidential celebration party, even the media was going to have to pay $1,000 to come.
Are you serious? I didn't hear that.
That was the latest thing out, and it was only going to be for the closed circle of maybe some of those people who were in the 53% or the 10%, those that major donors. That came out again today. Now, I want to kind of switch a little bit to and go with – What do we say about those that they take their clergy, and we had many African American black clergy who said they weren't going to vote for Obama because of the stand on same sex marriages. Well, in our 21st century context, how can we live and still put people in shackles?
Well, Brother Carl, as you know, both of us, member of the clergy, a couple of months ago, I actually wrote a note on one of the social media websites and stated that this fringe group is of African-American clergy who basically stood up and said that they would not vote for President Obama and encouraged their congregants to do the same simply because of his stance of same-sex marriage. You know, I said as a clergyman myself that they didn't speak for me. In fact, some of the more conservative wings of the media basically gave them attention. They were a fringe group. They really had no relevance whatsoever. But in fact, the conservative media tried to give them some attention, some self-esteem, because they knew that they were down in the election. I happen to believe that these people who stand for opposing someone to have the same right that they, enjoy, marrying someone that they love and things of that nature, I don't understand how they could represent the gospel that we represent, where it says love your neighbor. I don't understand that. It tells me that those people who call themselves members of the clergy, in particular this particular African-American group, who said that they wouldn't vote for Barack Obama, I think they had some other motives at hand. I think they were doing some things to kind of heighten their own profile, their own credibility in some other circles. And I venture to say that if you look a little deeper, there was some money that was also being exchanged for them to come out and openly criticize the president just because they happen to be black, hoping that that would impact and do a cultural divide within the African-American community on the subject of same-sex marriage. I think that there was some money being exchanged there to kind of promoting that, if you will.
Wow, that is sad that we still have people that's going to take the Judas deal.
And absolutely.
It doesn't make sense at all, you know, especially in our day and age. There's another report out today, conservative political pundit Pat Buchanan.
Is he still around?
Yeah, he's still around. He was on the Gordon Liddy show, believe it or not, from the Nixon era and that whole Watergate scandal thing. And he was an advisor to Richard M. Nixon, who was the only president who left in disgrace from our political system. But however, Pat Buchanan said, "White America died last night." Yeah, right. That was his reaction to the presidential reelection, and he goes on to say some other things, which I just think they're just blatantly racist. It makes no sense whatsoever. And to me, racism says more about who people are on the inside than anything on the outside of their skin.
Well, take a look at what Bill O'Reilly stated on Fox News on Tuesday around the 8 o'clock hour. This is one of the first indicators that the Republican Party was in trouble on Tuesday night. He basically went on national television and stated that the majority of people who are voting for President Obama are solely doing that because they want something in return. So when you look at the actual numbers, the electorate, those who voted for him, mostly people of color, he's basically saying the only reason why people of color are voting for the president is because they want something in return. We don't want to work hard ourselves. We want something to just be given to us. That is basically playing a racial card, trying to play on those racial sentiments. That's what they do. But I think the good news is out of Tuesday night, the American people shun that type of rhetoric. They are moving, or we are moving in a direction that they can't stop. It is increasingly becoming a more diverse country, one that is tolerant of multiple views, whether your sexuality, whether your religious perspective. You have to embrace all people, which is the true spirit of our Constitution in the first place.
Exactly. And that's why we do have the checks and balances of the system in order to that we don't have a plutocrat who can buy the entire election or just make it so that it's impossible for those who have a voice that they're not being heard or represented in our political process. Now, there's one of the things that was also said, too, is that the Republicans did not lose because of ideology. They lost because of idiocy. And there's a trend towards anti-intellectualism. The comments specifically that I'm referring to is Aiken and Murdoch on rape. As we look at this thing and the drift towards people not wanting to think, What can you say to people to get them to start stepping out on their own ideas and finding some gumption to not believe everything they see on TV?
Well, I think, first of all, people have to be more and more informed. They have to pay attention to what's being said and think critically. So when you take the comments of a Todd Akin or Murdoch, who ran for Senate, they basically said, let's take Murdoch's example, his statement as an example. He stated that he was not for abortion, even in the case of rape or incest, primarily because even though that the act was horrific, that life that was produced as a result of the rape, it was God intended. So
yes,
when you dissect that, you're basically saying, so God also intended that horrific act, that act that would traumatize a female, those who have been sexually assaulted know what I'm talking about. So in order to have that child be God intended, the rape also, or the method that child was conceived, also had to be God intended. That is fundamentally flawed. But the good thing is, 64% of single women in particular voted for the president on Tuesday night, which means they are starting to think very critical with regards to that. And the Republican Party continues to say, we want small government, we don't like big government, but they want government in your bedroom. They want government in your doctor's office with regards to a female. Let's not forget late last year there was some legislation in the state of Virginia that tried to force women to have an invasive ultrasound before they could decide if they wanted to have an abortion or not. They tried to actually force women to have an unnecessary medical procedure. Why do Republicans feel that they need to be in that way? And then lastly, I think the president stated in an interview last week, and it seems to be males, and particularly white males, want to dictate what a woman does with their body. I don't understand their obsession with that. I really don't.
I think it's an issue of control. And just like with 72% of white America voting, and I kind of have a problem with that, the skin tone thing. I think it's more of a mindset as opposed to skin tone.
Okay.
Because, I've heard some really crazy things come from even like the Godfather pizza man, Cain.
Herman Cain. Yeah.
Right. And some of the things that he said, and then our Supreme Court justice and some of the things he's said, and the rights that stands on affirmative action. And I believe that, like some of them have taken the money. Some of them have taken the buyouts. Others, it's a matter of they bought into a system that if I can just keep you down, then I can move up these ladder. But the problem with that philosophy is that you can't hold somebody down without standing still.
Well, when you look at some of our late great philosophers, the Howard Thurmans of the world, Dr. King, for an example, if you succeed on your own, have you really succeeded?
Right.
It's about the community. It's not about being individualistic. And some of the names that you just rattled off there, they're certainly about being individuals. They're certainly about accumulating the wealth for themselves. They don't necessarily care where they come from or the community in which they came from. We can say that with confidence because we can look at some of the policies that they've advocated for. We can look at what Brother Clarence Thomas on the Supreme Court, some of the things that he's voted against since he's been sitting on the court. It's about that individualistic type of a mindset. Hey, I've got here. I don't care where you are. I don't care how you get here, but I've got here. But it's seemingly like that there's a shift going on in America with the demographics and also the mindset, as you stated. I think it's going to be increasingly difficult moving forward for the Republican Party to continue to move forward with the type of platform that they have. And I suspect in 2016 that they're going to do a major shift. I suspect someone like a Marco Rubio, who's the Cuban senator out of Florida, is going to attempt to run for presidency in an effort to basically put a different type of lipstick on the same pig, if that makes sense to you.
But I think it's going to have to be more than just surface and a front person change. It's going to have to
be
some meaningful, authentic, honest, you know, get in there and do something for people to make them go back and get into a Republican. Because when you, I think at the last election they got like for Bush they got like 40% of the Latino vote, and this time they were down all, you know, to 27 or 23, and so that's really huge. And you're going to have to do more than lip service besides to convert these people to believing that you're really telling the truth.
But I can add something on to that as well, Brother Carl. Look at what happened in the state of Florida with the Republican Governor Rick Scott and his refusing to extend early voting. And so when we look at what happened in Miami-Dade County, in particular down at Miami, South Beach, Fort Lauderdale, that area, where the lines were 4 and 6 hour long, it is acts like that that actually motivated us to stand there and to say, we're going to vote. We're going to vote not only for the president, but we're going to vote against your action, Republican governor, trying to suppress our vote. It is things like that at a local level that is causing that uproar, that discontent with the Republican Party. And I agree with you, it's going to take more than the front man to kind of change that sentiment.
I understand that as well. Now, and as we're getting down, because we're winding down about to the last 8 minutes or so, and I want to kind of focus on some solutions and where you know, where Dr. King had said, build the beloved community, and in the title of the last book that he actually wrote was, where do we go from here? And that's my question now. Where do we go from here? Say if we do have a Boehner that, you know, continues to want to stonewall.
Well, I think in particular, the president did the right thing after his election on Wednesday, and today he called the majority leader in the House and the minority leader, Mitch McConnell in the Senate, the one who said his primary job was to make president a one-term president. He called them and said, "Hey, we need to work together." You know,
right.
The first thing certainly that we have to deal with is the physical cliff that we're. Facing, we have to do something about that before midnight New Year's Eve, because not only will there be a $1 trillion cut in Defense Department, but there will be across the board cuts on social programs, things that you know, the urban, the inner city kids and poor families are dependent on. We have to deal with that, and then long term, we certainly have to deal with our education issue that we have going on in America. When you look at what's going on in the state of Illinois, and particularly in Chicago, where the gang violence and things of that nature, look at what's going on with regards to education in that particular district that we're having all of the killings. That particular district is very low with regards to education. I propose that we have to have a mandate to reform our education so we can also change the mindset of our young people to kind of get them off the street, get them in these study halls and after-school programs. Right now, the budget has been hit so hard in the state of Illinois, in particular Chicago, they don't have anything else to do but to go outside and start shooting people. So I think when you look at Brother Tavis Smiley, Brother Carnell West, where they're trying to get a black agenda and get that into the face of President Obama, I think he has to start to deal with some of those things. And I think he's going to have some leeway now that he's going to be in his second term. He doesn't have to worry about reelection. He can start to really look at some of the things that's really going to affect the African-American community and the poor.
Now, do you think that in our modern-day church and politics, does the church have a mandate to be relevant to social and cultural issues?
Well, I've long said, and I think you know about some of the writings and some of the conversations that you and I have had, you know, the church has increasingly become irrelevant. In order to be relevant again, they have to start speaking to issues that people relate to. They have got to put the dogmatic rhetoric to the side, all of that doctrinal stuff that really is going to nothing but cause division. In order to speak to relevance, they have to embrace gays and lesbians and understand, hey, God doesn't care what sexuality you, God made you in his own image, which means come as you are. We don't worry about that. So as long as the church continues to be divisive in its stance and its positions start to talk about things that have absolutely no relevance to our everyday lives, they're going to continue to be irrelevant. But I think the church certainly has a mandate, but the question becomes, will they act upon it? Will the crooks in the church, those who are preaching the prosperity gospel, will they say, hey, let's start preaching a message of change, of hope, instead of just preaching a message of prosperity so I can keep getting my pockets lined with cash?
It's amazing, too. You wrote a paper, and it's on your Facebook page. If you all are listening, you probably can go to Wesley Snail Jr. on Facebook and see his writings or ask him to be a friend of yours. But you wrote in there, it's regarding Matthew 22:37-39, where it says, you shall love the Lord your God with all your heart and with all your soul and with all your mind. This is the greatest commandment. We're talking mm-hmm. about Jesus. And the second is like it. You shall love your neighbor as itself. And you described it as saying this is sins in something. Sin was something you shall do rather than something you should not do.
Absolutely. So when you look at when you go to church and you listen to the majority of preachers out there today, ministers, they talk about things like homosexuality, premarital sex, and things like that as being acts of sin, instead of saying things like poverty, things like predatory lending, things like war, inequality of any sort, that those things are not acts of sin. You rarely hear that. And when you look at Matthew, the particular scripture that you quoted, in particular, it talks about sin as being something that is done as a collective body, things that goes against loving or taking care of your neighbor, something that affects your neighbor negatively. That's an act of sin, because that is out of line of that mandate that God or Jesus stated, that beloved community, that we should live in a harmonious type of society despite our differences. So when you start preaching things of divisiveness, things that have absolutely no relevance to your salvation, that's where we start to get out of line with what God actually intended. And my interpretation, my scholarship through my years of seminary teaches me that that's what sin is about. When you start to talk about it in an individual mindset instead of from a communal standpoint.
Exactly, exactly. And we're coming down to about the last 2 minutes. We've got it. And I sure appreciate you coming online with us and talking about speaking truth to powers. And so just kind of give us a short little answer as to how should you speak truth to powers? What should you say without, you know, beating people down?
Well, listen, tall balls and strikes. Call them as you see it, but speak them in confidence, but also speak them in love. Do not try to tear down someone's confidence or their self-esteem, but you can speak the truth in a way that can also be constructive instead of divisive.
That's so cool. It's amazing and how we can speak the truth in love. One fellow put it this way, is the truth for truth's sake will cut people and leave them mangled like a butcher. But
wow.
Speaking the truth in love, it's more like they cut you like a surgeon, and once she finished cutting you and taking the stuff out, then she stitches you up so that
Absolutely.
You can heal.
Absolutely. I agree.
Yeah, and I think it's so important that we do move towards that healing and not be so quick to tell all the Republicans, just get over it. Because if we hadn't won, man, we'd be some upset folk.
No, we'll be hurt. We'll be hurt, but now is the time to come together and see if we can get things done for the common good, you know, for that beloved community, as Dr. King stated.
Amen. Well, I sure appreciate you, Brother Wesley Snail Jr. You can always listen to me. We're here on Help Somebody, and I am located at facebook.com, Help Somebody. You can follow me on Twitter at Help Somebody. And we will be here again and again. You can listen to the show archived over, and we're here. We just want to talk about it and make sure that you have an idea of how to be real and can we be real. We provide solutions for you to make a difference in your life. And just like Howard Thurman had said, he said, listen for the sound of the genuine. And that's what we need to do. We need to listen for the sound of the genuine in our own lives so that we can manifest and be the kingdom of God here in the flesh. and not to necessarily just put people down, but have compassion, have concern, show a need for cooperation, and be cooperative so that we can attain our common goals with a single vision, action, and produce some great results for our children and for your children. God bless you, God direct you, and God protect you. Until we talk again, I'm Help Somebody.